From the documentary series Breaking Ground, this is Yesterday's Dropouts. I'm Kavita Cardoza. I've spent the last 12 years reporting on education, and I've visited a lot of classrooms, from threadbare neighborhood schools just barely getting by to posh private schools where even pre-kindergarten can seem like college prep. I've reported on the dropout crisis too, how 25% of students don't finish high school on time. But I always stopped there. Then about a year ago, I realized that I've missed a big part of the story. What happens to all those students after they drop out? Do they ever get a second chance? That's what the show is about. The 30 million dropouts in the US and the hundreds of thousands who return to the classroom every year as adults, trying to make up for lost time. It's been years since they dropped out of school, but the long shadow of their unfinished education still follows them every day. So let's begin with the stories of three adults who left school decades ago. Literacy Volunteers and Advocates is in Washington, D.C., just 3 miles from the U.S. Capitol. It's where I first met Shirley Ashley, who's learning to read. She's really gentle and timid and is kind of embarrassed about her teeth, so she often covers her mouth with her hand. So listen carefully.
I used to say, Lord, find me a school where I can learn for people that's on my level.
Ashley is 55 years old, and when she joined the program a few years ago, she tested at the kindergarten level. Today, she's brought along a big folder.
What are all these certificates?
Okay. Ashley stops at one that says top performer in large letters.
I know this is top something. That means I'm doing good.
The word performer is still a jumble of letters that Ashley can't understand. She grew up in Washington and was always in classes for students with learning disabilities, but she wasn't learning anything.
I feel as though they just passed me, just get me out of school. I was just sitting there watching other kids.
In the seventh grade, after one teacher told her, whether you learn to read or not, I still get paid, Ashley decided to drop out. Shirley Ashley is one of 30 million adults in the U.S. who struggle to read a menu, a pay stub, or a bus schedule. 46 million find it challenging to do the most basic math. We continue going through the folder.
We're looking at one of my recipes for, I can't see out of my glasses.
This is not a recipe.
It's a bill for groceries.
Okay. See, we got cheese macaroni. I have my glasses. Okay, I can't read it because I have my glasses.
Wait, are your glasses downstairs?
No, I left them this morning because I was rushing out the house.
It takes several minutes before I catch on. It's not about the glasses. That's one of the ways Ashley hides the fact she can barely read. For years, she learned how to give her mother medicine based on the colors of the bottle, and she memorized Bible verses so no one at her church would suspect. She limited her travel to a familiar route.
I couldn't read the name of the bus, but I learned that the left-hand side of the street would take me downtown, and the right-hand side of the street is going to bring me back home.
As Ashley tells her story, her shoulders slump. It's as if she's weighed down by years of secrets and shame. She's seen those closest to her take advantage of her illiteracy, especially when it came to money.
I would have to pay them, my family members, to come over to my house to do a money order. Sometimes I give them $25, sometimes I give them $30.
Ashley's niece would fill out bank slips and withdraw money for her.
And when you call the bank, they'll tell you how much has been taken out. So I was saying, I told my niece to take out $20. So why is the information saying that she took out $40?
About 8 years ago, someone on a bus told Ashley about this adult education center, and Ashley's attended classes on and off ever since. She's now reading at the second grade level.
When my gas bill comes to my house, I'm learning how to read where it say, paid by July 17th. That makes me feel awesome.
Her life's dream is to write a soul food cookbook.
Put me in a kitchen and wow, I become brand new. When I cook, it's nothing left over.
One plus one plus 5. I think this would be a 9 over 10. Because I don't think I know how to do this one.
Ernest Robertson is Shirley Ashley's classmate. He's 58 years old and has struggled with reading all his life. But it's math that really trips him up. So he recently started using a calculator. Robertson pulls one out of his bag.
This is my best friend. I always have a calculator in the bag or in my pocket.
Robertson dropped out of high school in Prince George's County, Maryland, because he didn't understand what was being taught. Since then, he struggled with math every day, from buying a bus ticket to figuring out how much he could buy at the grocery store.
I try to add stuff up as I buy it, but that didn't work.
He was in awe of people who could handle money easily.
Especially bus drivers. Thinking this, they can tell how much people need to pay, you know. I just wonder how did they do it.
For 30 years, Robertson worked jobs that paid very little. Washing cars, cleaning buildings. When the car dealership where he worked went out of business, Robertson started doing part-time yard work. He says no matter how many hours he worked, he only charged $20. It was because he didn't know how to make change.
I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to do none of that. I think people can tell when you don't know how to handle money. They know how to get you.
Like Shirley Ashley, he would pretend he was having trouble seeing.
So I left my glasses and I can't see it. And I said, could you just do it for me this time? And some people are nice and some people say, well, I can't do it for you.
Robertson has the patient demeanor of someone who's used to waiting for help and the humility of someone who's used to having to ask for help.
It was very difficult for me. It was difficult and plus it was embarrassing. I get kind of quiet when things don't go right, you know. I just leave it over there and just walk out.
But he's not walking out of classes. Robertson's now doing fourth grade level math. He continues with classes because he wants to be able to help his grandchildren with their homework. He hopes learning math will also help him at his current job, laying tile floors.
Imagine the floor and putting the right price on. You just need to know how much to charge him. They know you don't know what you're doing. Well, I like this guy. I'm going to save money with him.
Robertson says it would be heaven to be able to do a job from start to finish and figure out what he should be paid on his own. Reading and math are difficult enough for many adults, but for millions, there's the added challenge of not being able to speak English. Across town, Carlos Rosario International Public Charter School in Washington, D.C. serves adult learners from nearly 80 different countries. Most are immigrants at the bottom rungs of society, working basic jobs and hoping English will help lift them out of poverty. Ana Perez never made it to high school. Her education ended after the sixth grade when war broke out in her native El Salvador. She says she's desperate to learn English. But when I met her recently at her school, she asked if she could speak to me in Spanish. Why?
I'm feeling nervous.
You're nervous?
Yes, because my grammatic is very difficult when I'm talking.
When Perez moved to the U.S., she worked 3 jobs to support the 2 children she had to leave behind.
Mi horario en el beauty salon.
At the beauty salon, it was from 9 to 5, and from 6 to 10, I had a part-time job. And at the 2 days that I had off at the beauty salon, I used to clean up houses.
Perez made $600 a week from her 3 jobs. She looks weary and worn down, just remembering those days. And soon, a steady trickle of tears rolls down her cheeks.
Pero es cosa tan tristeza. Todo lo que uno pasa. Porque...
You have to work even if you're sick. There's no time for yourself, only for work. Whatever you feel, it doesn't matter at that moment. As long as you have hopes to help your family that you love, that you've left.
Across the country, there are more than 20 million adults, mostly immigrants, who grew up speaking a language other than English at home and who are still held back by their limited language skills. They're signing up in huge numbers for English classes, but there are long waiting lines in almost every state. Perez was lucky to get into Carlos Rosario, which has 1,000 people on its waiting list. But going to school was a difficult decision for her because it meant giving up one of her jobs and having less money for her children.
Oh my God, say, oh, because I need money for my family. Oh, it's a very, very difficult thing, no?
Jorge Delgado, the assistant principal at Carlos Rosario, says many of these adult students make incredible sacrifices to come to class. Most work long hours.
The other day I was leaving an activity and it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And when I went to pay, it was one of my students. And I'm like, don't you have a class at 8:30? He's like, yep. So what time do you get out? About 5.
His students do all the uncomfortable jobs that make everyone else's life comfortable. Delgado says some students struggle with attendance because they're working multiple jobs.
We said you're falling asleep in the class because you worked all night. And we do counsel them. Maybe you want to come next semester when it's colder and there's not as much work in the food industry.
Most students at this school aren't interested in going to college. They want to learn English so they can get a better job. Many of their dreams are one small step higher than what they're doing currently. One student washes dishes in a restaurant and wants to be a server. Another babysits and wants to open a small daycare center. A third works in a beauty parlor and hopes to become a supervisor there.
I know grow up in here in this country.
The more comfortable Ana Perez feels, the more she speaks in English. Her biggest wish is that her language skills improve.
And now that you speak English...
I speak English? Oh my God.
She's so delighted. I understand her.
You understand?
I understand everything.
Oh my God.
After years of struggling, Perez says her life is wonderful now. Her daughter and grandchild have moved here. She works just one job and she's become a citizen.
I love America. This country for me is a special country because I have my dream. My family is better, living better.
Adult learners at this school at least have a chance at a better job and a better future for their families. But for every one of the students who get to learn English at Carlos Rosario, there are 5 more waiting, hoping for their own shot at the American dream. Ana Perez, Shirley Ashley, and Ernest Robertson, like thousands of other adult learners, are slowly and painstakingly trying to fill in the gaps of their rudimentary schooling. Coming up, I always thought the GED test taken by millions of Americans who dropped out of school was the equivalent of a high school diploma. I was wrong.
It definitely is not an equivalent. It's not even close in terms of equivalence.
You're listening to Yesterday's Dropouts. You can see videos of adult learners and check out the literacy rate in your county at our website, breakingground.wamu.org. I'm Kavita Cardoza. Welcome back to Yesterday's Dropouts. I'm Kavita Cardoza. This hour, we're asking, what happens to the millions of Americans who drop out of school? What are their lives like 10, 20, even 40 years after they leave the classroom?
No spin.
At Academy of Hope, a nonprofit adult education center in Washington, D.C., 36 graduates stand in blue caps and gowns.
Somebody said the left side for the tassel. Anybody remember? All right, left to right. Everybody on the left. First nine.
These students are receiving General Educational Development Diplomas, or GEDs. There are thousands of similar graduation ceremonies happening across the country, so it's no wonder the GED program is sometimes called America's largest high school. The numbers are astounding. GEDs accounted for approximately 12% of all high school credentials given out last year. For all the students at this graduation, going back to school has been difficult. They've struggled with unemployment, uncertain childcare, and learning disabilities. So for them, the GED certificate is much more than a piece of paper.
She says that I'm not dumb.
This is for my mother. She's seen how hard a life I had, and she gonna cry more than anything.
Now I feel whole. I feel like it completed me.
The GED test was created so that our military veterans, whose education was interrupted by World War II, could get a credential and go on to college. 18 million people have passed the test since it was introduced in 1942.
I'd been in the Navy a year when Pearl Harbor happened. I was sleeping in my bunk.
Dallas Jones, who's 90 years old, was one of the first. He's hanging out with some of his veteran buddies at the Armed Forces Retirement Home in Washington, D.C.
How long did you stay in? 30 years, 3 months, and 17 days, counted to the last hour.
All right.
Jones grew up poor in North Carolina.
My parents were tenant farmers, so we were down the bottom rung of the ladder during the Depression.
He dropped out of school at 15 to help support his family. 2 years later, he joined the Navy and was at Pearl Harbor when it was attacked. After a few years of service, Jones decided to take the GED test and passed.
That's important, especially if you're down at the bottom. You've got to have an education. And the GED filled the gap.
After 20 years in the Navy, Jones went on to be a successful defense contractor. He was married for 60 years and raised 2 children.
I was glad to get the GED, which is equivalent.
It definitely is not an equivalent. It's not even close in terms of equivalence to a traditional high school diploma graduate.
That's Janice Lawrence, a professor at Temple University in Philadelphia. Several years ago, the Pentagon started questioning the value of the GED certificate. And in the 1980s, they asked Lawrence to investigate whether there were differences in outcomes between a military recruit with a high school diploma and a military recruit with a GED certificate. She found stark differences.
Traditional high school diploma graduates are much more likely to complete their enlistment term. For example, only 24% of them leave before completing a 3-year term. And the corresponding rate for GEDs is about 45%, so it's almost half of them don't complete their term of enlistment. That's a stubborn, stubborn trend.
This is a huge deal because each new recruit who drops out early costs the military tens of thousands of dollars in wasted training. So Lauren says those with GED certificates are now considered second-tier candidates. They're admitted sparingly. It isn't just the military that's noticed differences. Nobel laureate James Heckman at the University of Chicago in Illinois is writing a book about the GED test. He calls it an incomplete, misleading measure.
We're producing GEDs. It's like a factory where nobody asks what the final output is.
Heckman and his co-author, Tim Kautz, researched those final outputs, and what they've come up with isn't pretty. Kautz says compared to high school graduates, those with GED certificates
have lower earnings, they have lower employment rates, higher divorce rates, and also lower levels of health.
Heckman and Kautz argue the GED test is deceptive because it conceals problems. That's pretty strong language, but they have several examples. For starters, Kautz says including GED certificates in the national graduation rate hides racial inequalities.
So if you count GED recipients as high school graduates, the black-white gap in high school graduation rates has closed substantially. If you don't, there's been no progress in the last 40 years.
The GED test is often billed as a gateway to higher education, but it doesn't work quite that way, Kautz says.
We find that about 40% of GED recipients try some form of post-secondary education, but about half of them drop out within the first year, and within 6 years, only 1% earn a BA degree.
Critics say the GED test is just that, a test. High school is not just about academics. It's where students learn soft skills, those personal qualities you need to succeed, such as being disciplined and persistent, as well as how to work in a team and show up on time. That's why the GED test worked well for those early military veterans. It's because they learned those soft skills while they served. C.T. Turner with the GED testing service defends the test.
A lot of economists look at this and they punch some holes and they say, well, you know, maybe someone who earns a GED credential doesn't earn much more than someone who drops out, but this is not important.
He says what is important is that the test is a critical pathway, and without it, the approximately 30 million adults who don't have a high school credential couldn't even apply for most jobs or go on to higher education. In a sense, Turner is right. Thanks to government incentives, the GED test has become a ticket to most federal jobs programs, college grants, and for prisoners, a chance to get out of jail a little sooner. It's given many undocumented immigrants a better shot at staying in the U.S. But James Heckman with the University of Chicago says the GED test should be evaluated not on whether it opens all those doors, but on how many people go through them.
It's better than maybe nothing. But we're kidding ourselves, and we're also kidding them that GED is going to help them much.
Approximately 430,000 students passed the GED test in the U.S. last year, but that number is expected to be far smaller in 2014 when it undergoes what some adult educators call a radical overhaul. Molly Broad is president of the American Council on Education, which, along with Pearson, a for-profit company, oversees the GED test. She prefers the term dramatic transformation.
The competitive global economy requires our workforce to continue to raise the level of skill and education. The test is going to be better because we're raising the requirements.
Raising the requirements is the first major change to the GED test. It means the exam will be far more difficult. More critical thinking, more science, more writing. Students will also need to have more background knowledge. This change worries Leicester Johnson, who runs Academy of Hope. Because the GED test is becoming more difficult, she has to move from using mostly volunteer tutors to hiring professional teachers, doubling her current budget.
With the new GED, the depth of knowledge required, we need subject area experts in the classroom. For us, that's a huge financial burden.
Adult educators, like Johnson, say they're not against raising standards, but they say there's been no support or resources to help them implement these changes. In contrast, just in DC, for example, when the K-12 system increased standards, schools got 4 years and millions of dollars in federal funds to help prepare. The second change is, next year, students will no longer be able to take a pencil and paper test.
The GED test on computer, truly for everyone.
That's one of the upbeat advertisements announcing the changes.
The GED test on computer only requires basic computer skills. Pointing and clicking answers, dragging and dropping items, and basic typing ability.
But this change worries educators as well. Gloria Sward is from Palm Coast, Florida.
My students are reacting very fearful, very stressful, very confused. I have many students who do not have a computer, many students who do not even know how to operate a computer. They don't even know what a mouse is.
Even when programs offer computer classes, they often don't have enough of them. Stephen DeMeo teaches in the suburbs of Boston, Massachusetts.
We have about 1,000 students at the school where I teach, and we only have one computer lab. So at any given time, we only can put about 5% of our students on a computer.
Molly Broad says almost all jobs nowadays require minimal computer skills, and she says there are other advantages. You can register anytime online, better test security, and an instant report.
You'll get your score right away, whereas now you have to wait weeks and sometimes months to even know whether you passed it.
But perhaps the change that upsets people the most is this. In many states, the GED test is going to cost a lot more to take next year. In some places, including DC, the price will more than double, from $50 to $120. To get a sense of what this means, you've got to meet Claudine Edwards. She dropped out of school at 13 after having a baby, and when she did, her dreams of becoming a nurse evaporated. This is the third time Edwards has enrolled in adult education classes. She stopped coming the first time because of an abusive relationship. The second time she took the GED test and she failed.
I went to school every day, every day, every day. To this day, right now, I feel like I could cry because I really, really studied.
Now she's 53 and has come to Academy of Hope to enroll in classes. Edwards is like many adult learners, very fragile, with little confidence. She lost her job as a cleaner during the recession, and for 5 years she's been unemployed. Edwards relies on food stamps and her daughter pays her rent. She tenses when staff member Catherine Walsh brings up money.
So the last thing is fees, and it's $30 per term.
Can I bring in Friday or next Monday?
Yeah, okay. And actually you don't have to pay all at once. Right. If you want to pay $10 at a time, that's fine.
Edwards looks relieved. Then a few moments later...
If by chance I don't get the money, mm-hmm. where is where I have to volunteer at? I mean...
Edwards is talking about the school's volunteer system of payment, where she can help to put away chairs and clean the whiteboard. That way she'll only have to pay a third of the fee, $10 for 3 months of classes. But Edwards can't afford even that. She'll have to ask her daughter for the money.
Can you give me a copy of this, of how much it is, so I can show it to a loved one so they can, because I'm not working. Mm-hmm.
Rosemary Lishka says this story is familiar. She's the director of continuing education at Kansas City, Kansas Community College. She says for her students, $30 or $50 is a huge amount of money.
It's a utility bill, it's groceries, it's gas. Many of our students buy enough gas to get where they're going to go on a given day, and then they buy it again as soon as they have to go somewhere else.
But C.T. Turner with the GED testing service calls the $120 rock-bottom pricing. He says right now, states just lease the exam, and they're responsible for all the extras.
They have to find someone to score the test, proctor the test, issue the transcript credential. All those things cost something.
Those extras will be included in the price of the new test. He says that's why it's going to cost more. But those reassurances are of little comfort to Valerie Ashley. She runs Southeast Ministries in Washington, D.C.
It absolutely frightens me. Will I even be able to maintain a program? I'm not trying to be like Chicken Little, but there are so many things that are unknown, unanswered, but they all have a dollar sign attached.
Many adult educators say the GED test is changing so fast with so little information and support because the students who will be affected are already so beaten down and vulnerable, they're not likely to advocate for themselves. Would this be happening, they ask, if we were talking about the SATs? Some states, including New York, Montana, and New Hampshire, have already announced they'll scrap the GED test as the high school equivalency exam and work with other companies. More than 40 other states are also considering alternatives. So, are there programs for adults that work? Everyone I spoke to talked about this wonderful model in Washington State that everyone else was copying. So in our next segment, we'll go there to see how it works.
I have a student that's now a general manager of a dealership, and I'm sure he's making two or three times more salary than I am.
You're listening to Breaking Ground, Yesterday's Dropouts. If you'd like to see how you do on the new GED test, we've got sample questions on our website, breakingground.wamu.org. I'm Kavita Cardoza.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Yesterday's Dropouts. I'm Kavita Padosa. We're talking about the struggles of the 30 million adults in the US who don't have a high school diploma. 30 million people whose stories are often unheard, and yet their struggles affect us all, directly or indirectly. As a nation, we spend $2 billion a year on adult education. Half a billion of that is federal money. The rest comes from states and local governments. Sounds like a lot of money, right? Well, Lennox McClendon with the National Council of State Directors of Adult Education says, not when you put it in context.
Adult education and training programs traditionally receive less than 10% of the amount of federal, state, and local funding that goes to K-12 and less than 5% of what's spent to support higher education.
And the financial picture is poised to become worse. Chris Van Hollen is a member of Congress from Maryland and the ranking Democrat on the House Budget Committee.
We've actually seen about a 17% drop in funding for adult literacy and education programs just since the year 2002. On top of that, the sequester will impose another 5% cut. And then the House Republican budget proposal would actually cut it by another 20% below sequester levels.
And remember, he says, these funds already serve only a fraction of adults who want services.
So we would be taking a system that's already inadequate and making it a lot worse if these cuts were to go through.
McClendon says getting funding for adults who dropped out of school is also harder because many Americans believe they've made poor choices.
One senator recently said these people had their chance and we shouldn't spend any more money on them.
It's true, McClendon says. Technically, they did have their chance, but now they need a second chance. So it was about this point I started to feel pretty discouraged. There seemed to be so many sad stories and not much hope. And so I did what I usually do when I feel that way. I searched for a program that works. And I found it in Washington State. The program is called Integrated Basic Education and Skills Training, better known by a far simpler acronym, IBEST. Louisa Erickson, who helps run the program, says a few years ago, people in the community college system realized they had a serious problem. They had too many people who wanted jobs and too many jobs unfilled.
And instead of hiding it and saying, wow, we're not doing a good job, we really exposed it and said, wow, we're not doing a good job. And asked the people who are doing the work, what do you think we could do?
That's how IBEST was born. Students going through this program are the same as you'd find in any adult education class across the country. They've often dropped out of high school years ago and have low levels of reading and math. Many don't speak English fluently. Through this program, they can take college-level courses and earn certificates in any of the almost 200 courses offered, from medical billing to welding to building maintenance. The secret is team teaching.
But it's also her developmental stage. Look at how old she was. Does it say how old you think she is?
It's where two teachers are paired, like Candy Benteo and Rachel Rogers. They've worked together for years, teaching a child development class at Green River Community College, 20 miles south of Seattle. They have different roles, though. Benteo teaches the academic content, while Rogers teaches basic skills, reading, math, English.
Tell me what it was like in the beginning.
Oh, my. Well, we worked through modules, yeah. Sometimes there's still tears, huh?
Yeah.
Benteo says in the past, when students nodded, she assumed they understood. But many of her students don't. They just don't want to seem stupid, or if they're from a different country, they don't even know it's okay to ask a question. So Rogers plays what she calls the eye of the class. Give me an example.
Idioms.
Thank you.
See, we do finish our sentences. Idioms.
Candy would say these phrases, fly by the seat of your pants. And I would would interrupt her and I'd say, does it mean that I'm throwing my pants up in the air and flying? Or what exactly does that mean? And she would laugh and the students would laugh because that's what they're thinking. By my modeling that, it gives them permission that it is okay to ask questions, and that's the sign of an intelligent and a good student.
At the end of this course, students will take a nationally recognized childcare credentialing exam, but Benteo and Roger spend a lot of class time emphasizing soft skills, including appropriate workplace behavior.
Some of our students will dress very
provocatively?
Yeah. Just not what you'd want in a childcare environment. We have lots of conversations about the way we dress and the way we smell. Too much perfume, too much incense, not enough deodorant.
IBEST also shortens the amount of time adult students are in school by bypassing the GED test completely. If they're in a college program and earn an associate's degree, they can receive a high school diploma retroactively. Candy Benteo says having two teachers in the classroom helps them quickly boost student skills and get them into jobs, which is the main point of the program.
That's what helps our students become so vested in the program, is they can see that light at the end of the tunnel. Oh, there's another idiom, huh?
There's an IBEST program in every community and technical college in Washington State. All of them have to demonstrate that students can get jobs paying a living wage when they graduate. In most parts of the state, that's $13 an hour. There's a long row of cars inside an auto mechanics class at Shoreline Community College, and students are working hard trying to fix them. Some are bent over engines, others are crouched close to tires. These adult learners have finished the theory portion of this class, where they learned about the physics of manual transmissions. Now, the hands-on part has begun.
So when the switch is off...
Mark Hankins is the instructor.
On, yeah, okay. You've actively turned off the traction control system.
My brain just clicks with engines.
That's CJ Forza. He dropped out of school in the 12th grade. He's now 31. Forza had a messy upbringing, bouncing around foster homes. But he says through it all,
cars have been like the one thing since childhood that I'm really excited about.
Forza loves cars so much, he's already working part-time in a mechanic shop. He's now learning the why, not just the how, of repairs.
Instead of just guessing at what it is, I'm more able to figure out, okay, this issue can be caused by this, this, or this.
Like most adults in this class, Forza is juggling many responsibilities, without much money to hold his life together. But he sticks it out because he can see exactly what the connection is between this class and his career. At the end of 1 year, Forza will have a certificate in general auto mechanics and will see his pay jump from $10 an hour to $15.
I want to be the breadwinner of my family. I have a 3-year-old daughter that I need to raise. I want a career, not a job.
Yeah, we still get to play with cars.
This class isn't child's play, though. Instructor Mark Hankins says students have to learn the complex systems of today's cars, so at the end of the program...
they can go out and they can do a brake job, they can do fluid replacement, they can do inspections, and those are the kinds of jobs that there's a big need for.
He says that's what IBEST is all about, giving students specific skills that employers value so they can get jobs. Independent research has shown students in IBEST are more likely to earn college credits, earn more money, and work more hours compared to similar students not in the program. It's been so successful that more than 20 states are implementing some form of this model. Hankin says IBEST really does make a difference.
Okay. I have a student that's now a general manager of a dealership, and I'm sure he's making 2 or 3 times more salary than I am.
Louisa Erickson, who helps run the IBEST program statewide, says when people talk about the program, they often discuss the numbers and the model and the research. But at its heart, she says, IBEST is about giving people another chance.
A lot of people will say, well, why can't they just pull themselves up by their bootstraps? But not everybody has bootstraps or even boots.
You're listening to Yesterday's Dropouts. I'm Kavita Cardoza. I was telling a friend about some of the adult students I had met, and she said, that's a fabulous story. But she said it like it was just that, a story from 10,000 miles away that would never affect her life personally. But I was learning it does. In many, many ways, we all pay a high price for low literacy.
Could you give me
just outside Washington, D.C., at the offices of the Literacy Council of Montgomery County, Maryland, Jason White is learning to read.
Kids won't go out in the rain, R-A-I-N.
I mean, I try pretty hard. I feel like it's so much, so many letter combinations, there's so many things to take in.
White grew up in Louisiana and dropped out in the 11th grade. He's 35 and has worked all over the country as a construction worker, even though he struggled to read. At a restaurant, he'd say, "I'll have the same thing my friend is having," because he couldn't read the menu. He'd ask for directions based on landmarks because he couldn't read street signs. And after work, he'd spend hours with the dictionary, getting ready for a routine visit to the permit office.
I would look up or write down every word I think I would need to spell. If I were changing a support beam, we would write, you know, support beam, change, existing, all the words you think you would need so you don't get in a spot. Because if everybody's adults and you're the only guy that can't spell, how do you, you know, ask for help? You know, you don't let nobody know.
For many years, White couldn't even tell his wife. His tough guy facade crumbles when he talks about the frustration of not being able to read and the fear of someone finding out. And his lack of education has finally caught up with him. He hasn't been able to get his contractor's license and advance in his career.
So it's like being a very good fireman, but you're not really a fireman, you know? I'm very handy, but I'm technically not a contractor until I pass that exam.
In one sense, White is far luckier than most dropouts, who are more than twice as likely as high school graduates to be unemployed. And Stephen Fuller, an economist at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia, says even when they do get hired, it often means low-end jobs, part-time or seasonal. Fuller says the whole economy suffers when so many adults have limited skills.
You train a worker and they go to work, earn money, they spend their money, support other jobs, they pay their taxes. And so the return on investment, if it's done right, is extremely high.
Many advocates say adult education looks expensive until you look at the alternative. Spending money on unemployment checks, food stamps, and subsidized housing. There's also incarceration costs. Adults who are poorly educated or lacking job skills are far more likely to end up behind bars.
We find that about half of the people who come to prison didn't finish high school.
That's Stephen Stewart, who heads the Correctional Education Association, an advocacy group for educators in jails and prisons. He says research shows inmates enrolled in education programs while incarcerated were 40% less likely to return to prison compared to inmates who were not. Stewart says the majority of inmates will eventually be released, so funding educational programs should be common sense.
It's public safety, baby, you know? It's not a hard sell to tell a congressman, whether they're Republican or Democrat, that education reduces crime. But who wants to make the choice, we got to build another grade school or we're going to build a prison school?
Some adult educators say improving literacy rates would not only make for a safer and more prosperous country, but also a healthier one. Alice Marashelian runs the health education program at St. Mary Center in Washington, D.C. The clinic serves 25,000 patients each year, and she says the barrier between caregivers and patients who can't read, write, or speak is a huge problem every day.
We use illustrations for medicines. We would draw the sun and the moon as to when to take the medicine. Sometimes we help them put it in the pill boxes because they can't count either.
For some common conditions such as diabetes, the least compliant patients are the ones with low literacy. It's not that they resist medication, they just don't know how to measure the amount of insulin or don't understand a wrong dose could be fatal. Some researchers have estimated the cost of low health literacy at least $100 billion each year. And often, Marashelian says, the cost of a parent's low literacy is borne by children.
For example, giving cough syrup, measuring how much they might be overdosing their children. And it's absolutely unintentional. Or for asthma, some of these inhalers have the same color. So confusing the ones that are short-acting and long-acting also is a problem.
Marashelian says when children don't get better, Doctors may increase the dosage of a drug or change the medication, thinking it's not working. There are more emergency room visits. Children have to miss school and parents take off from work. With a chronic condition, this could mean the child falls behind academically or the parent gets fired. At Literacy Partners, a nonprofit in New York City, immigrant mothers are sitting around and remembering what prompted them to join the program. Selina Begin from Bangladesh was motivated by a confusing conversation with her doctor.
They said, today your appointment is cancelled, but I heard cancer.
And she confused cancelled with cancer and started crying.
Then my husband said, why are you crying? I said, I have cancer. He said, no, your appointment is cancelled.
Everyone laughs, but they all have their own stories. And at this family literacy program, those stories usually involve children. Nubeg Woman is from Ecuador. She's here with her 17-year-old daughter, Vilma.
My kids, really, they don't want to pay attention when I didn't know English.
If she would attend to the parent teacher conference, she would just nod her head and leave.
I was afraid I didn't go.
7 years ago, Vilma and Nube joined this family literacy class, where they worked on reading skills separately and together. Research shows parental involvement improves a child's academic performance, resulting in higher test scores, better attendance, and improved graduation rates. And Vilma says that's exactly what happened.
And it just makes me more ambitious. It's like a race in my house. Who does the best?
Before, I didn't know how can I speak English. Now I can speak very well English.
So very well, in fact, that Nube, someone who was once scared to even enter her children's schools, has summoned up the courage to join her parent-teacher association.
And some parents, they nominate me to be parent representative in the class. I feel very, very proud of me.
Nubeg Gorman is a success story. But what happens when we fail to achieve these goals with others? And not just immigrants to the US, but for all people struggling on the margins. Perhaps the biggest cost is one that can't be measured. It's the invisible cost of what might have been. The perfect person to explain this is Milton Whitley. He's 58 and just published his autobiography. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I let him tell his story about growing up in North Carolina.
When I'm in the first grade, I had a teacher named Miss Randolph. She used to spank me because I didn't know how to read. I believed that I were unteachable, and that hurts when you believe something about yourself like that.
Whitley dropped out of school, worked as a bricklayer, got married. All the while, he managed to hide his illiteracy. He would go to a store and pick items based on the pictures and colors.
I just stayed in the store so long, and really might be picking up four items. I didn't know which milk, which low-fat, whole milk, skim milk, goat milk. I just didn't know. When I found out about them tops, the red tops for whole milk, blue top for low-fat, and the green top for, you know, I stayed sad and angry.
He used drugs, spent time in jail, moved to a homeless shelter. Then one day he went to the dentist and asked the receptionist for help filling out forms.
I asked her three or four times, ma'am, I said, can you help me fill this form out? No, you have to do it yourself. That was about 10. And so got all the way up to about 3:30. I'm sitting there, you know, sweating bullets. And I asked her, she said, no. So I'm feeling worse and worse. I said, well, ain't nothing I can do but started checking. And I started doing random checks.
Whitley took the form back.
All the boxes were checked because I didn't know which one not to check. And she said out loud, you pregnant? I checked the box, said pregnant. And everybody laughed.
That was a turning point. At 52, Whitley found a tutor with the Literacy Council of Montgomery County and started learning to read. It's been a slow, hard slog, but now Whitley can read his medicine labels, he can write out checks, and he can keep up with the latest news on his beloved football team.
I love the Redskins so much. I know all the terminology, like offense, quarterbacks. So when I get the paper, you know, I don't have to skip some words and, you know, this might be this, that might be that. I can just read it all the way through.
He says that feeling is priceless.
I know I'm liberated now because I can read, I can write. When you can do things on your own like that, you're more free. It's beautiful. People are beautiful. And I'm not just happy. I'm happy, 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 happy.
That happiness is Whitley's hard-earned prize after years of heartache, a victory for the man who vividly remembers those spankings he received from his teacher. Looking at Whitley's life, it's easy to see what his inability to read has cost him. It's also easy to see why he and other students who do poorly in school, day after day, eventually give up and drop out. What they can't always see is that the path that follows is hard. A lifetime of dreams that lie just out of reach. It means a business not started, a song unwritten, a bedtime story never read. Even those who do go back to school often struggle to complete their studies and get a steady job. But for many of yesterday's dropouts, there's something else at stake as well. A chance to emerge from the shadows and finally be seen. You've been listening to Breaking Ground, Yesterday's Dropouts. Our producer is Tara Boyle. Special thanks to Mark McDonald, Memo Lyons, Karen Munson, and Kathleen Allenbaugh, along with Chris Lewis, Seth Liss, Kerry Moskal, Natasha Lim, and the rest of the WAMU digital team. Our interns are Eva Harder and Kelly Romando. Our theme music was composed by Greg Smith. We'd also like to thank Robin Kaler, Noel Gunther, and John Barth. This production is distributed by PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, at prx.org. You can hear more about this program and find photos, videos, maps, and lots of extra reporting on adult literacy at our website, breakingground.wamu.org. And if you missed any portion of today's broadcast, you can hear the whole hour there as well. Thanks for listening to Breaking Ground, Yesterday's Dropouts, a production of WAMU in Washington, D.C. I'm Kavitha Cardoza.
This project is a part of American Graduate, Let's Make It Happen, a public media initiative to address the dropout crisis, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.